I mean, that was crazy. You're explaining to me how, what was it, that FM, in terms of FM radio, almost 50% of the stations you hear are like, this transmitters were made in Quincy.
Yep. Yeah. So, and that's, again, I think, you know, you live in Little Quincy, Illinois, you don't think that you have a global company that's been building transmitters for almost 100 years, populating them all over the world. It's pretty cool when you think of it from that perspective. It puts us kind of Quincy on the map, which is kind of cool.
An international business, mm-hmm. doing the deals and dealing with the new tariffs and things like that. Sure. How does that like impact, I guess, people that aren't thinking about businesses in the U.S. that are working internationally?
Yeah, I think the tariff is a really misunderstood thing, because I think, you know, if we flash back to or jump back to 2019, 2018, the Trump administration at that point put in tariffs on China, 25%. And we, Gates Air, had our board house, so our contract manufacturer that builds the computer boards, we had them built in China. And that 25% tariff, because we couldn't get out of there very quickly, Gates Air paid about $6.5 million in tariffs from the time that we tried to get out to when we actually got out and moved it to Thailand. So, you know, we think that the other country is paying for these tariffs and we're gonna somehow penalize them. You're really penalizing them by moving the business long term. But in the short term, you know, the company is paying the taxes. The company that's importing those goods is paying those taxes. So tariffs have a big impact on us, especially as we try to go to some of those places where we're getting better costs from those countries.
So is it, when you say the short term, is an administration's 4 years, is that long enough to see the benefits of it?
No, I think you probably, you know, I think a lot of times, and this is another thing that's hard in politics, is you probably don't see the good or the bad of some of these decisions for 8 to 10 years. And there's other variables that happen in the meantime that are layered on top of that. So it becomes kind of hard to know, hey, if I did this 4 years ago, is that really why I'm seeing, you know, this inflation, you know, for an example, right now? I think it's all more nuanced, and there's arguments on, you know, there's good and bad things about it. But in the short term, definitely the businesses are going to have to, you know, fork over those dollars until they get things reset. The other thing we don't consider too is if you brought it all on shore, and we see this at Gates Air, if you brought it all on shore and you went to a domestic board house, what you'll find is that the cost is still higher than the tariff. So we're going to end up passing that on to the customers, and that probably is going to cause some level of inflation. And then the other thing is some of those board houses in the U.S., if everybody came back at one time and said, hey, we're pulling out of China and Thailand and all these places and we want to build it in the U.S., you wouldn't have the infrastructure or the capacity to do it right away. So it would cause huge spikes in demand and the supply wouldn't be there. Labor's not there, training's not there, building size, energy requirements, all those things, you know, would need to be considered.
It's kind of like the example that you gave a little bit ago when we were chatting of the South Park, where it's like step A,
yeah,
steal the underwear.
Yeah.
Step C, make money.
That's
and
right.
It's like, what's step B?
That's right. Step B is the question mark. And then you leave it to it's funny is you leave it to the small businesses and the, you know, middle managers say, hey, you figure this out, right? We can't afford this cost, but we also can't pass it on to the customer. So what do you do? You know?
Right. So when you talk about like the management figuring different things out, what in your career has kind of led you on this path? Like, is it been like having that kind of keen eye for different things of process improvement? Can you walk us through a little bit of how you got where you're at?
It's a lot. It's like most things. It's somewhat luck and somewhat hard work. You know, I think anybody that says that, you know, I'll make it happen, and anybody says it's all luck, they're probably two extremes, and it's probably somewhere gray area in the middle. You know, when I came in, there was it was a very good time to be the guy who kind of says, hey, I'll take this. Hey, I'll figure that out. Hey, I'll come up with the idea. Some of those ideas ended up being good, but in a lot of companies, you might have a lot of good ideas and you might drive a lot of cost savings. You might drive a lot of change and a lot of benefit to the company. But if you've got a company like, you know, Amazon, for example, that's very hierarchical in structure and has three or four different positions above you that are being paid well and don't want to leave. You could be the best buyer on your supply chain team, but you don't get the management job because somebody's been there and wants to stay in that role. So you need the opportunity to be able to move. And what happened here was, I had mentioned earlier that Harris divested Gates Air. When they divested Gates Air, it was kind of this situation where I think a lot of the bad senior to mid managers, they were rooted out pretty quickly by private equity. The private equity guys come in and they say, hey, you're not cutting it. You know, you're out. the really good ones were maybe a little bit scared of the change. So they decided to find stuff on their own and they said, hey, I'm going to go try another business and get out. Right. Don't want to be involved with private equity, which I get and appreciate sometimes. But then you have what you leave with is one dad. I remember one night it was working late. We didn't have kids yet, so I could work a lot later. And I peek up over the cubicle and it dawns on me. I'm like, all those offices that used to be people in there, they're all empty. And it's like, there's nobody in this entire building that's a manager anymore. Right. And so it was the private equity guys coming and saying, hey, do you want to try this? And I said, yeah, I'll take that project. Right. And you take that project and they give you the next one. Right. And that led to, do you want to manage the floor? And then managing the floor led, do you want to lead the whole facility? And so, those things kind of stacked up. It took some hard work, obviously, but it also took an opportunity to get there as well.
So just like taking those opportunities and volunteering for different things that might be out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
When you get out of the comfort zone, I think that's where a lot of the growth comes. And so you experienced that here at Gates, right? So you college, graduate school, Gates.
Yep.
And then what happened? You had a stint at Amazon, is that right?
Yep. So I got in 2022. I reached out. Amazon recruiter had called me, and they had a management role that was leading their new data center deployment and build schedules. So I went there, moved to Austin for a year, packed up all the kids and the family, sold the house at the low interest rate that we had locked in during the COVID times, and moved to Austin and worked there and was there about a year. And then Gates Air called because the vice president of operations had decided to step down and retire. And he had recommended me to the new board. The new board wanted to have interviews. And I love Quincy, the community. I love the people here at Gates Air. And so it was a draw to come back because of that. It was a draw to come back because there's a certain level when you're in a small business, the autonomy to be able to try things and to be able to test fast, fail fast. You know, when you're at Amazon, you don't get to do that. You go through very, very hierarchical structure of, hey, you got to get this approved, and then you got to have another meeting, and you have another meeting. And here you really get to get in, and even if you're the director of operations, you get to be there on the floor, you get to see what's going on. And so there's that piece of it. And I think also we underestimated the lift that it was going to take to re-network out. I think my wife and I are, thinking, hey, we're social, and we'll get out and meet people. And I think we would have, but it's going to take a lot more time, especially in these, you're going down in 2022, it's still kind of post COVID. People were working from home a lot. My wife was working at a hospital as a nurse, and there were a lot of nurses that come in on the 6 to 12 week rotations that are traveling nurses. So there was no consistency. So I think all those things led us back to coming back to here, and then coming back and being back for 2 years, probably the best decision, I've ever made. There's a book called The Alchemist, and in that book, The Alchemist, I'll ruin the ending for anybody that's listening, but he finds out that the treasure was actually buried, or I don't know if it's buried, but it was in the tree right to where he started the whole journey to begin with. And it took him the entire journey away to come back to realize it was there under his nose the whole time. And I think we had a little bit of that, right? It was if you look back, you wouldn't want to, I don't want to go all the way down there and come back. But I think it took going away to come back to realize, hey, we've got a really good community here. We've got a lot of people we trust, a lot of people that we care about. And so this helps us put more value to it.
Yeah. I mean, when you leave a community that's like all you've known, I think there is that like underestimation of like, hey, we'll be fine. Like we'll be able to figure it out. And sometimes it works out great. I mean, I'm sure people have plenty of stories of moving to a place and just loving everything about it, meeting a good friend group. But like, that's hard to do, especially like the time you said you were doing it. I mean, it's hard. I mean, I've moved around my whole life, so I can get that. I mean, even from like grade school on, it's like just finding a consistent friend group is difficult. Through like moving, it makes you realize and be able to understand a good community when you see one.
Sure.
So in Quincy, what kind of things are you like involved in around, outside of work? Do you participate with any of your like kids sports, stuff like that?
Yeah, I do a lot of kids stuff. I coach them for most of the sports. My oldest is getting to the point where I'm no longer probably going to be able to be the coach anymore. They're getting a little bit above my pay grade in terms of how I can manage them. But do a lot of coaching with the kids. My kids are active in jiu-jitsu as well. So, we do a lot of that together. And then, I spend a lot of time I'm on several different boards. So I'm on the Salvation Army Advisory Board. I'm on the GREDF, which is the Great River Economic Development Foundation's board. And then I'm on Connect Family Services as a fostering philanthropy. And And so I do a lot there. And then I used to do a lot more running than I do now. So we've got a group called the Cobweb Cowboys. I'll give a shout out to that. And we do a lot of trail running, a lot of long distance stuff. I haven't run with them as much as I have in the past. I spend more time in jiu-jitsu these days, but I think on all those things, you really find you're getting way, you think you're volunteering or you think you're doing something, that's, you know, for you, but you really find out that you're getting a lot more back from all the other people. I mean, you're hearing things, you're learning things, you're building those relationships and you're having more analog time. And so that part of it is really cool. And again, it's what kind of keeps you in Quincy. I think if you're in a bigger city like Austin, a lot of those boards and there's not as much interconnectedness as there is in Quincy.
Yeah. So with the kids' sports and being involved with them, how do you kind of manage your time in terms of, like, you know, board meetings? I'm sure once a month,
most of those are once a month. Yeah,
so like once a month board meeting, trying to keep up with running, being active with jiu-jitsu and keeping your kids involved with your kids. Like, how do you like see that kind of in your schedule, and how have you made improvements over the years? I'm sure that's something that you have to work on.
Okay. So I would say first that I probably don't do a very good job of it, but I think one thing, I think this is from Atomic Habits. I could be wrong. I've now got this overlap of reading too much stuff. So now I can't attribute it right. So if I'm saying to the wrong book, but it may not even been from, it may have been like a subset, but essentially the thought was, is like, I'm a type A person. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to go get this and I'm going to get it done. I'm going to win gold, or I'm going to get the promotion, or I'm going to help my kid do this, whatever it is. I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it to the max and I'm going to probably overdo it. Right. And one of the things you fall into is you start saying yes to a lot of things and you're involved in a lot of things, is that it really becomes hard to hold that high bar at all those things, right? I can't be the best at jiu-jitsu and be the best at this. I can't be the best dad and be the best at this. There's a trade-off. And one of the things I thought was pretty cool and pretty, you know, deep and has helped me is giving myself the permission to change the scale, but not the scope. So a lot of times, and I'll pick workouts for an example. So I would get, when I'd be training for an Ironman or some long distance thing, I would have a schedule that I got from a coach, or I paid for a program, and I would be so adamant that I'm not missing. You know, if they said it's an hour run, I would do an hour run. I mean, it wouldn't be 59 minutes. It'd be an hour run, right? And what happens though is that inevitably life gets in the way and you can't do it an hour that day. And then I'd beat myself up over it. I'd say, I'm not doing the program right. I'm not holding myself accountable. And so what I've changed to, when I say change the scale and not the scope, is that if the plan in the morning was to get a run in, and then my daughter was sick in the morning, right? Maybe instead of getting the 3 mile run in outside, I'm going to hop on the treadmill and do 15 minutes. Right. And the 15 minutes still holds me accountable that, yep, I got some cardio in the morning. I'm moving in the right direction. I'm not going backward, but it doesn't put the pressure on me to say, okay, what am I going to do to make this happen? Cause I've got to get 3 miles. So I think that's a big thing that I've applied generally.
Yeah. I think that's really hard with former athletes, like collegiately, of like, you have the workout regimen and you're trying to, you know, max out all the time. And whenever, I feel like whenever you get into the real like life situations of thing of like, oh, I got to be at work, or I have to travel for this thing, or the kids have this going on. It's like, you can't push yourself all the time to meet those requirements. And in sports too, it's like a season. Mm-hmm. So you have that season of a couple months. And then when you're in the life, it's like, oh, this is just all the time.
Right. Never stops.
Yeah. I can't we go hard in the winter and then do nothing in the summer. It's like, you got to find that balance of having everything. I mean, that's really interesting with the scale and not the scope. Cause I feel like with the scope, you want to have those broad horizons with just your experiences, being able to experience multiple different things and then not be like completely remove yourself from certain situations. Mm-hmm. So how do you gauge yourself in terms of, like, when you look at running or jiu-jitsu, you can see the medal or the time that you run. How do you judge yourself, you know, as your in your career growth and in your family, like, life?
So if I'm understanding your question right, is like if I took jiu-jitsu and sports and being a dad and being a business, like how am I saying I'm successful in those things?
Yeah, how do you kind of measure that? Yeah, like, how do you measure that? How do you check in of like like, how would you define somebody as being a good father or you know, a good husband and that sort of thing?
Well, I think, I mean, it maybe sounds a little cliche, but if we just picked on the father and husband, I think a lot of it is just presence. I mean, I think a lot of things are that way, that a lot of times you don't have the right thing to say, you don't have the right action to take, but just you being there consistently. And it's the same with jujitsu or running. Like you get better at running just by running a lot more. You know, you can run at high volumes, but low intensity. And you just do it over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, you know, you can start to pick up the intensity, right? You can start walking the block and then running the block and building from there. And I think, you know, fatherhood and being a husband is that. I think on the husband front, I think the thing Ashley and I realize is that, you know, to have a good relationship, you got to have two people that are willing to really go over and above for the other one. So they're always kind of saying like, hey, you know, if you're doing that, I'm doing this. I'm going to look out for you. You're looking out for me. And if you're both trying to serve each other more than trying to serve yourselves, I think it ends up with kind of a good mix where it's like you end up going in the right direction. I think a lot of that is things that you have to be flexible on, and you have to make sure that you're not, you know, overcommitted to one certain way of doing things where you say, hey, this is not working. Let's pull back and let's try something different. I think on the father note, you know, I think it's really hard for me because I a lot of times question what, you know, what does it mean? You know, I think, one of the things that I try to do with the kids is help them enough that they're able to move forward without completely falling over, but not to, you know, if it's a proverbial, if they're learning to ride a bike, at some point letting them fall into the concrete, right? And kind of being okay with that. I think an A-type personality kind of goes to the point of maybe being a little bit of an over parenting, where you're the helicopter or the snowplow parent, whatever they call it. And so Ash and I have actively tried to say, to make sure that the kids are, they know we have unconditional love for them. They know we're there to support them. But they also know that we're going to give them the freedom to kind of be their own, you know, I really would kind of, even though Albus Dumbledore wasn't Harry Potter's dad, I think his the way he handled Harry is the way I think you should be as father, right? It's like he knew when to step in and defend him when he was out of his, you know, over his skis and he wasn't going to be able to do it, right? But he also knew when to let back and let him kind of go out there and live his own life. He also, you know, gave him guidance without control. So it was like he guided him, but he let really Harry figure that out. And I think that's what we got to do as dads. We've got to be there to give him support, but we've really got to let them kind of become who they're going to become. Yeah, the freedom to fail and all the lessons that you get from that, right? I think if you take that away and you say, hey, your dad was successful, so you're now going to be successful because you got money, more money to start out with, or a better education, that somewhat robs them, you know, of that. I don't know of that experience. There's a Boy Meets World episode from a long time ago. If you're familiar with Boy Meets World,
I might have seen it like once or twice, okay. Maybe.
So when I was a kid, it was a big thing on Disney, and there's an episode when they're older and they're in college, and Corey and Topanga are the main characters, and they're married, and they buy this like crappy little apartment or a house. I don't know what it was, and the Corey's upset because they had to buy the house because the mom and dad, who had money for a down payment, wouldn't give money for the down payment. And the episode culminates with an issue with this leaking faucet that has bad water running through it. And Corey gets a book and he figures it out and he fixes it. And he comes over to his dad's house that evening and he's got a glass of water and he's like, here, dad, drink it. And he puts it in his face. And the dad, you know, Alan's looking at it. And he takes a drink and he said, so what? I drank the water. And he's like, that's water from my house that I fixed the plumbing. I did all this stuff, right? And he says, the dad says something to the point is like, when your mother and I were just starting out, we didn't have anything and we lived in an apartment like that. And those are some of the most transformative and some of the best parts of a relationship. And I would never rob that from you, right? I would never take that from you. So I think it's trying to get that type of, you know, the experience where you don't want to see them suffer, but you also want to see them have that experience and learn that lesson and, you know, make those bonds and move forward.
Yeah. I heard one, on the Dave Ramsey show lately. You ever heard the Dave Ramsey show? He was a question from a viewer, and he's like, is it a terrible idea to give my 18-year-old my first home, like that he grew up in? And he's like, well, why are you saying it's a bad idea? You're making it already seem like a bad idea. And he was kind of going on that same note of like having him learn how to, you know, build equity, maintain it himself. And then he kind of gave him like you're saying with the guide rails of like, we're going to guide you, but we're not going to completely take over everything of like, okay, if you can meet these requirements, like you can live in the house. If you pay me a little bit of money, you can show like a plan for renovation. You can kind of build on that yourself. Yep. I think that like giving them the tools to be successful, but then not like jumping in and using and just taking everything over. Right. I think that's huge. Or like the dad with the holding the flashlight for dad when he's working on the car, right? It's like the same kind of thing where it's like, if you're the one working on the car, then you can learn yourself. But if you're just standing there and he's kind of driving and doing all of this stuff, you're not really learning anything.
Well, sometimes too, I think as parents, we're so busy that the reason why you're having to hold the flashlight is because you know that I can do the problem. I can fix it faster. Right. And I think that's something I still need to work on, where it's like, take a slow down and say, you know what, you try loading the dishwasher. I know I can load it faster if I fixed it all for you, but why don't you try to problem solve and figure out how that goes in there. And I think as parents, it's hard for us. We just want to jump in and say, if anything, just because we're out of time, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So when you take a look at, your oldest is 12, is that right?
Yeah, 12.
So when you start to think about, high school now, college later, are you taking that approach in terms of guiding them in their career, like helping them kind of choose their own lane? Like, are you encouraging that career exploration? Like, what kind of things are you looking for as they get into high school?
Well, I think the main thing is, and I'll just pick on Brighton 'cause he's closer, is I think there's so much change that's coming with AI and with, you know, the college structure and kind of how it works, and what skills. I mean, if you ask me what skills do you want them to have, I'm not even sure I could tell you for sure 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what skills are going to be important to have. Now, I think about that and I say, okay, well, I think the skills you want to have is you want to have the interpersonal skills and a lot of those analog skills that you know that the AI and that, you know, computer software program is not going to be able to easily replicate. You know, all the messiness that makes you human. I want him to have that. So it's like, I'm really more, coaching him on how does he learn those skills? And he's very good at those skills. So he struggles at school, right? He struggles in math. He struggles he struggles with focus. I think maybe like most 12-year-old boys in general, but what he doesn't struggle with is he'll go, you know, through jiu-jitsu, but he's started a couple of businesses in the neighborhood and he'll go to people's doors and he'll knock, he'll pitch him the product, he'll pitch him the idea. He gets turned down a lot. Right. But you know, I keep thinking, you know, if he's 12 and he's willing to go look face to face with somebody, you know, put himself out there and fail a lot of times. Those are things that I think I want him to have, whether he goes to college or a trade school or he's an entrepreneur or whatever that may be. I think so. I'm really more leaning towards if I could get some general skills that could be widely applied and then let whatever's going to happen, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years happen and go from there.
Yeah. So yeah, man, that's one of those things too, is like you kind of pick up on as a parent whenever your kids are younger. I think, just picking up on that and being able to like reiterate it to them, giving them the confidence of like, hey, I noticed these skills in you. Mm-hmm. And then it's something where, have you read the book, Work Plus Love by Marcus Buckingham? Yeah. You're familiar? So that book kind of talks about like finding the things you love about your job or whatever career you're in, and then applying those and focusing more on those. And then as you kind of move through your career, building up those little things that you notice you love into like your dream job, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I think you noticing that in him and then putting that into like his peripheral, like, hey, I notice you're good at this. You don't mind doing this. Maybe these things that I guess you could look at as weaknesses or things. Do you think to guide away from that, or do you want them to like focus on the struggle that they have to kind of improve? Like, how do you kind of view that?
I mean, I've tried to kind of explain to them that you need to understand and know that it's there. But under the guise of kind of, do you focus on your strengths or do you focus on your weaknesses? That kind of the ask. I think my thought is that making sure he won, to your point, I think it's a very valid thing to say like, hey, I've recognized you have high emotional intelligence. That's a really good thing. And that's something that you're better at than the majority of people, right? A lot of people don't have that. You may compare yourself to the kid over here doing good at math, right? But maybe he was blessed with just a higher level of ability to retain and understand, you know, mathematical concepts, and you don't. So I've really tried to focus more on the positive while making sure he understands that these are the things you struggle with and you get to make a choice. And I think probably I'd sum it to say is we have this conversation a lot in our house, and I'm not sure it ever sticks through. At some point it will, is that all these things are choices, right? If you say, hey, I'm not very good at math, right? You have two choices. You can continue to not be very good at math, or you can focus on math and you'll get better at math, right? And neither one of those. So then I think the classic 12-year-old is that he thinks one of those two is bad, right? Is, well, which one's worse? And it's like, well, neither of them are bad. It's just going to be the outcome of what you choose. So if you're not going to prioritize being good at math, don't hold yourself to a standard that you should be good at math. If you had done the extra work, right, you're just going to get by with a C, then I'm okay with that. Get by, pass with a C, and then use that time somewhere else. If being good at math is really important to you and it's hurting your self-esteem or it's causing some issue, then let's figure out a game plan to fix it.
So it depends more on like the person and how they kind of view their situation. I think so. Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. I think going back to some of like the family and when you started. So when you had Brighton as your first, right? Yeah. So when you first had Brighton, what does that look like, Michael? Not a dad, Michael, and dad, Michael. How do you kind of compare the two? And would you have like any kind of advice that you would have given yourself?
Well, I think this has probably got to be true for most dads. Is like prior to, you know, previous Michael before kids was way more selfish, right? Was way more focused on, you know, what he has to do to be successful and not, you know, the overall family, right? You, when you're married, and we were married a year before we had kids, there's a certain level of that already. But I think because your wife is, you know, typically somebody who can, you know, take care of themselves and has their own career. You don't, when you have this infant that has, you know, no, you know, ability to defend itself or to take care of itself, you feel like this, you know, it's just hard to explain to somebody who's not a dad. It's just, you feel like, hey, this is real now, right? This is a lot of weight, right? And so I think that kind of mindset switch of it's not just about me. It's about how the things I do impact everybody else while still trying to maintain, you know, things that are important to you and give you kind of put fuel in your tank, is kind of important. But I lost the first part of the question. You're just saying, what would I advise?
Yeah,
I tell
yeah.
myself?
What kind of advice would you have? I mean, you see some of the differences in terms of like people will say, you know, you don't know how like hard you can work until you have a kid and somebody to provide for. And when things aren't going super well, like how much more motivation that is. I mean, just the contrast of the two, you know, it's like if you could give yourself advice, I think for me, it would be like, hey, save more money. You know, that's a huge one. Save more money and just focus on the right things that are going to put, you know, fuel in your tank, that are going to enhance you, your future, right? And then just being more of a complete person, like not just being like if you're a sports guy, like, oh, I'm just all sports all the time. I'm not going to worry about like anything else. I'm just going to go in here and do what I like to do. So that's kind of like for me, I don't know if yours is any similar to that.
Yeah. I think, on the tank part, I think that's again a hard, if you're somebody that is really driven, it's a hard balance, right? And I have that with jiu-jitsu where I'd like to, if I would have found this when I was 18 or 19 or 20, I would have spent, you know, 7 days a week there, you know, trying to get better, because there's no offset to what I'm missing out on, right? But yeah, I think in general, you know, the advice I'd give myself is that you don't know how, you don't know how hard it's going to be until you get there and you know it. But then what you find is that like the last hard is just the baseline, and it's not that hard anymore. And you just take on the next thing and the next thing. And then you get that mindset where it's like, I'll put it this way. If I told myself when I was, you know, 20 years old, 21 years old, hey, this is what your day looks like right now. And these are the demands you have, and this is what the board of directors expects, and what your wife needs, and what your kids need, and I got to run this person here. You'd just be like, I wouldn't even get out of bed, right? I'd probably say this is too much, you know. But now that you're into it, and you've been building on that, and you've been, so it's like, I think the hard things become easy things, and you just keep chasing the next hard thing until it doesn't become a hard thing anymore. And you know, I joke sometimes with Preston, our young guy at jiu-jitsu, a lot, right? That he'll tell me that he's got this hard thing, right? And it is a hard thing to him at the moment. It's not downplaying that piece of it, but you realize that it's the hard thing because your last baseline made it the hard thing, right? I got to study for this test. Okay, well, what if you got to study for this test and take care of a kid and run to a board meeting or you know, whatever that next thing is, you all of a sudden say, it's, if they can do it, you'll be able to do it. And so I think there, that piece of it is would be important for me to remember that you think it's hard. It's always going to be hard. That's never going to change. The next thing's always coming. It's going to be harder, and you're going to be okay. You're going to get get through that next thing, and it's going to become easy.
Yeah. Similar to like, hey, if I'm doing this every day, it's just going to become second nature. And then eventually I can add on to that. That's, yeah. I mean, that is the way that it kind of goes. I mean, I think the one thing that I've noticed that it doesn't get easy is that newborn stage, mm-hmm. and you have to get up and sure. you don't know when you're gonna have to get up.
Sure.
And then the next day you still have to do everything. Yeah. That's one that's really tough. But yeah, I mean, going to jiu-jitsu, like, what kind of made you first come to a class? Was it like a friend? Was it going to the gym? And I know Vitor recruits a lot of gym guys.
Sure, sure, sure.
How did that kind of start?
No, I think we Brighton. I had Brighton in it when they first started in 2020 at Hannibal, and I was kind of interested to want to join, but thought schedule wise I wouldn't be able to do it. Then the pandemic happened, and actually I take that back. I think the pandemic had already started, but it was that summer and we didn't really know what was going on. As it got further into it, we then pulled them back because I felt a little guilty if I'm having all these social distance things at school or with the daycare, and then I'm taking him to jiu-jitsu and he's rolling around with everybody. So we kind of paused it. Then we left and did I did a trial class in Quincy when they first opened. It was a morning class and it was just Professor Veter and Marlon.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was a bad, and Marlon's like, you know, like a late blue belt or early purple belt, just running, throwing me everywhere. Yeah. So I was like, man, this jiu-jitsu stuff's really hard. And I had planned to stay, but then that really was the exact timing that next month is when we decided we were going to leave. When we came back, we got the kids back involved in it. And the kids did it for a couple months, and Ashley and I got to thinking, and of course Ashley's doing it as well. It's like, hey, we're going to be here anyway, you know, with them at nighttime. What if we did it at the same time? And it kind of is not an overlap of I'm missing time with the kids. And then if I get a few in, you know, get two or three lunch classes a week, you know, it's during lunch break. It's a little bit of an extended lunch break, but it's not cutting into that family time. But so that was why I joined. And also I thought it was a little cross training, right? I really did it initially because I was training for Ironman Florida that first year in 2023. I was training for Ironman Florida and I wanted to do some cross training. I thought, you know, it's kind of some strength and some tendons and ligaments and stuff. I'll do this. And then I finished Ironman Florida and then started training a few more days a week and then started to have a little bit of success. Went to that first tournament and won, and thinking, hey, the tournament was kind of fun. And I found at the tournament, it was doing the tournament was fun, but it's more fun like having people there cheering for you and you're cheering for other people. You know, I know yours, you were down there roughly by yourself.
Yeah,
man,
yeah.
You didn't have the whole group there.
Right.
So the ones that we've done that have had everybody, it's equally as fun to cheer for them. But mm-hmm. when you're down there on the mat and you have, you know, three of your guys yelling behind you, you know, what to do or what to watch out for, there's just, it feels like you're out there with it, you know, and it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. It's so much different than team sports in that aspect, like how you're talking about. Cause I mean, you're out there by yourself. It's like if you don't do, you know, if you put your arm in the wrong spot or if you expose your neck too much, it's on you and you can't blame anybody.
Sure.
And then you got the guys in the back kind of yelling. So it's like they're your teammates but you're the only one out there. I think that's huge with it too, man. I mean, the beauty of it that I see, and so you didn't go to any schools in Austin?
Nope.
So yeah,
no schools in Austin.
The beauty that I see in our school is that, like, I feel like Vitor and just the people that teach, Bo and everybody else there, they kind of understand each student's goals and they can kind of tailor it towards, you know, the different levels that they kind of see you at. So like, that's really huge. Like if you want to go for gold in different tournaments, they're going to treat you a little bit differently and kind of focus more on points and that sort of thing. What is that kind of one of the things that keeps you coming back is like that he has that versatile way of training? Because sometimes, and I hear this a lot in the jiu-jitsu community, is like when you start, it's like so hardcore, so competitive that it's just like, I can't keep up. And it's just getting beat down all the time, constantly. Is that kind of one of the things that you see in our school that's a little bit different?
Yeah, I do think he and Professor Bo's the same way. They've done a good, because even in Hannibal, I know a couple stories of people he's done this with, like he's identified what they need, not maybe even just on jiu-jitsu mat, but like, they're at a crossroads in life or they're struggling. He's Professor Bo and Professor Veter have went kind of behind the scenes to work on some of those things to, hey, let's drive you in the right direction. Let's kind of be a mentor of what's a better way of looking at that, or how do we reframe this situation you're in? And then when it comes to getting on the mat, I think you're exactly right. They do a very good job of, if you have someone like Brian who's training with us right now, Brian's a world champion now, so I can't say that. But he came into that initially as like, hey, I'm an older guy. I'm trying to get exercise. I'm trying to stay in shape. I'm trying to, you know, he had different goals. Now, ultimately, he ended up winning the biggest goal you can win, right? So kudos to Brian. But I'm using him as an example, as he may have had a different goal than, you know, you bring in a 20-year-old Preston who's, you know, strong as an ox and has a lot of time on his hands to go, you know, go be able to compete. So, I think that is cool. And then I think there is a certain level of just kind of brotherhood in the analog experience where, it makes you feel good to go at lunchtime or nighttime just to be around the people. Even if we weren't doing jiu-jitsu, if we're doing something else, I just like the people, you know? So that's been good. And then it's just, I like the challenge of it. I like the fact that, you know, you just mentioned you stick your neck in the wrong spot. I liked it. I like, things where you could work your butt off and you could be, in the best position and you should win. And then it can just, you know, heartbreakingly just end the wrong way. Right. There's some beauty in that. Right. I mean, if you think about it there, you can't control the outcome no matter how good, and you can put the time in and you can put the time in and do those things, but you just don't exactly know how it's going to go. And I think there's some beauty in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're never good enough with something like that. I mean, you can compare yourself all the time, and you're never gonna always win, sure. Right? And I think comparing yourself to yourself is a huge part of that, sure. and just noticing like, oh, I'm getting better and better. I mean, whenever you mention like the people that you're with, I think that's huge too. It's like it's one of the sports that I've noticed that it's. There's not a lot of toxicity with it. I mean, in terms of like your average day to day, right? If you look on social media and you see like the big guys, they're talking trash, they're doing all that, right? But like on an average class with just your guys that you're with, it's a lot of respect, even in competitions. Like it's respect. If you lose, you're going to get a handshake and it's going to be like, you did good. I hope. The first round I lost in my competition, it was no gi, right? I remember I couldn't hear anything because I was just nervous, you know? And so I shake hands, bump fist with this guy. I look down and I see like some like tiger or some logo and it says wrestling, and I was like, oh, here we go, you know. And so, and then immediately I kind of held off for like a minute and a half, and then I got down and then got spun around and ended up losing by a choke or whatever. And then as soon as it was over, he like tapped me on the back and he's like, hey man, I hope to see you in the later rounds, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like that kind of camaraderie of like, you know, I think because everybody has to kind of fail at that. Sure. it's not something where, and this is just a theory that I have going, it's not something that when you're a kid, you kind of grow up doing. Sure. So by the time you're able to like discern between good, am I good at this, bad at this? You're just having fun with it as a kid.
Sure.
When you come into it as an adult, it's immediately like, am I good at this or am I bad at
right.
this? And
right.
so everybody's been bad at it.
Right.
So I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, you started, so how old were you when you started? Like you said, you had that class in like 2020-ish, right?
Well, I did his morning class in early 2022, and then I joined in 2023 full time. So it was that year between the early part of 2022 to the early part of 2023 that we were gone. And I did. And one thing I did want to mention real quick, you mentioned, I think the respect is an interesting piece of it, because I think there's a certain level of respect you just have if another guy is willing to come out there in front of God and everybody, right? Their wife, their whoever, and they're gonna legitimately, you know, could break their arm or get choked out in front of everybody. Whether you win or lose, there's a mutual respect that it's almost like down to our like masculine core of, you know, we're gladiators fighting, that you have respect for the other person, no matter whether they just completely trounced you or not. And I like that piece of it. We certainly have it within our own gym. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, but you also see it when you go out there. You're like, hey, that guy was willing to come out here. You know, he's doing it in front of his wife and kids just like I am, right? So he's got the same pressures that I've got. And that takes a lot for you to do that, right? Just stepping on the mat, I think, is a big thing where you and I now have, you know, a bond that is gonna be better than a lot of people have, you know, that have known people for a long time but don't have a real bond, you know?
Yeah, man, that's huge, because there's like a lot of people talk about the underlying, in men, the underlying like notion of like, could this person beat me up or not, sure. kind of thing. And I think that's a lot of like college friendships, high school friendships. There's like that kind of dominant personality, yep. and that sort of thing. But then it's like, whenever you come with people from jiu-jitsu or like you and I, it's like, we've both kind of been on the mat. We kind of know how strong each other are. We sure. kind of get that, but it's like, it kind of peels that away in a sense of like sometimes, and I think it's realistic too in general. It's like sometimes I'm going to win, sometimes I'm going to lose. Sure. And that also is one of the scarier things when you think about how you were mentioning gladiators, like mm-hmm. the people that really were fighting for their life some days. Right. It's like somebody could have died that right. was fighting for their life and he could have been amazing.
Right.
He had a bad day.
Right. Yeah. He missed a grip or he missed a whatever the thing is.
He just didn't put it. He put his arm in the wrong spot. Yeah. Right. I think that's one of the things that I've really learned. And it's kind of translates to life of like you were mentioning your career is like the luck part of having different opportunities. It's like some people just didn't have the opportunity, but I think with the opportunity, it's also like, do you put yourself in the right position?
Right. Well, so, and do you consistently show up for that? I mean, it really is like, hey, how many at bats did you take before you got the home run? Right. You probably didn't hit it the first time, but if you swung 1,000 times and all of a sudden I continue to have a higher probability that I'm going to have that success. So I think in jiu-jitsu is the same way, like at work. I mean, if the project failed, figure out what failed and try to iterate on that, try to get better and go back and do it again. And if you keep giving yourself, I think, but the problem is most people are so short-sighted that they fail one time, it's over. Fail two times, I've already tried hard, right? What else you want me to do? And the people that really are successful, they're just the ones that just keep showing up every day. They do the boring, I mean, it's the easy thing, but it's the hard thing, right? It's the easy thing, just keep showing up, keep trying, but it's the hardest thing for everybody to really do, I think. So, you know, from that perspective, I think our school is somewhat unique, though, maybe, I think, in that, it, you know, when I did go to one in Italy, I rolled with some guys in Italy, and it did not, you know, for the time we were there, it did not feel like they had the same type of, it was very much more transactional, right? It was not kind of, you know, you and I, you know, going out, both of us trying to get better.
Yeah, I think school by school a little bit, I think overall, when you have the kind of message that is behind there, like the respect piece of martial arts is huge, yeah. Right? I think that kind of drives a lot of that. So what do you see like your goal in jiu-jitsu of being like, I know with, first I want to talk a little about your stint in like the marathon scene, right? Yeah. So Ironman, how did you kind of get into doing that? And like, what were kind of your goals? And do you feel like you achieved those, or is that still something that you're kind of going after?
So I think, you know, this maybe sounds a little bit repetitive, but it was basically trying one thing and that led to the next. So I started running, and I was like doing, you know, some 5Ks and 10Ks, and thought, you know, maybe I'll, you know, bump up the training plan to a half marathon. I did, I think, bridge the gap in like maybe 2012, 2013 timeframe, and ran a pretty good time for me, like maybe 1:45-ish, you know, like a little under an 8-minute mile for the half marathon. I thought, hey, I did pretty good. I enjoyed, and I started to find that I enjoyed the therapy of running, right? So I think it was more about the process of, hey, I want to have something to have a goal for to give me an excuse to get up every morning and go do this thing. And then I get the dopamine hit and the serotonin, and I'm off to do to work. And so then I thought, okay, well, I'll try some marathons, right? So then I did like the LA Marathon and Chicago Marathon and St. Louis Marathon. I tried some bigger marathons to get a feel for what that looked like. And then I thought, okay, and this whole time, right, you're always thinking the next thing is like, those guys that do that are crazy, right? You know, and then you do it and it's kind of back to the thing about things get hard. It's like, it's hard, but it's only hard to touch when you're always running marathons, right? It's not hard. And so then, what really intrigued me about Ironman was like, hey, I'm already in pretty good shape on the run. And I'd been doing some cycling with the Quincy Bike Club at the time for a while. So I've been doing miles, probably not the miles you need for an Ironman, but I was doing some miles, but I was scared to death of the open water swim, right? Never had any formal training in swimming. Obviously I could swim like you and I could always swim, where you could doggy paddle and, but never long distance. And 2.5 miles in the open ocean, right? It's a little bit of a scary thing, but that kind of attracted me to it. It's like, it's like the things you've come to fear the most, right? It's like that is what kind of drug me to it, was I'm scared to get in that water. And I will tell you, I did my first, sprint, triathlon in an open lake somewhere outside of Springfield, Illinois. And, I don't even remember the name of the triathlon, but Ashley was there with me and it was a 400 meter swim, right? And in triathlon view, it's a pretty short swim, right? So it's four, down and backs of a, you know, Olympic size 50 meter swimming pool. And, I swam maybe halfway out, had people all around me, got kicked in the face, you know, my goggles came off, and I went into full blown just panic mode. I mean, I thought I was going to drown. It was, you know, it was like my heart rate was going so high and I couldn't, there was nothing to grab onto. And, so when I got, it really set me off back. So when I got back, I thought, oh my gosh, that was 400 meters and I barely survived the 400 meters. You know, how am I going to do? But I ended up hiring a coach out at Sheridan and he did some form stuff with me and we did drills and stuff. And ended up doing Ironman Louisville in 2017. And I did a time that I had a goal for a time, and the time was right around 12 hours, and I finished like 12 hours and 13, 14 minutes. So I was happy with that. And then from there, I got into some of my ultra stuff. So I was running like 50-mile runs and some trail runs and stuff. And then kind of dabbled going back and forth out of, I do a triathlon and then I do a longer distance run. And I think what I found is I initially wanted to kind of qualify for Kona or one of the big triathlon events. But I think what I found was the level of effort to get the 2 hours off was going to be something that I couldn't manage, you know, from a kids and wife and work standpoint. And that that maybe wasn't even the thing I wanted. Any of what I was really looking for was just the challenge. And if I just had some challenge out there, it didn't matter what it was. If I set the goal and went after it, that was good enough for me. Even if I didn't hit the goal, sometimes I didn't hit the goal. And now that's translated into jiu-jitsu, where I started it kind of the same thing, that, man, these guys are crazy. That's hard. I can't do all this stuff. And, had some success at some of those early tournaments. And now I'm thinking, you know, hey, I can, yeah, I keep doing this and, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah. So do you have a goal for jiu-jitsu, or is it like, just like you said, kind of just setting something up and chasing after it?
I think the short-term goal, I'm going to try to win a world championship this year in Vegas, at Blue Belt. But then I think after that, I think the goal is just going to be to, you know, do this for a long period of time, and do it with a group of guys that I like for a long period of time, and all get our black belts together. I mean, that would be that my long-term goal would be to be a black belt with all of us that have been training about the same amount of time, getting black belts at the same time. And I think on the world championship standpoint at Vegas, and we're getting ready to do Indianapolis here in a couple of weeks, as kind of a test to see where we are. It's not from an ego thing. If I'm really being honest, it's not a thing for me to get the medal. It's like, I really want to go out there and compete to show how good our instructors are and how good the school is. And so it's almost like an ego for the team, if that makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, ego maybe is not a good thing in general, but this is not a selfish one. It's more for, I want to go out and show Gracie Bala Quincy, I want all 10 of us that are going to take 10 golds and have everybody go, oh my gosh, those guys came, they must know what they're doing, right? At all different belt levels. So that's what I'm looking most forward to is doing that and being able to kind of continue to put Gracie Bala Quincy on the map.
Yeah. I mean, because it really is a testament to like all the work that professor's been through and all the work that just the school has gone through to get, you know, get a building, yeah. get the resources together to open in the first place. I mean, especially in an area like ours, it's like, how many schools are within, you know, 30 miles of here?
Sure.
Four?
Yeah, I think it's maybe, about four.
And two of them are Gracie Baja.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's it's a tough area. And to have somebody like Vitor in here is really sweet, too, because he's, you know, from Brazil. Sure. Did you know, he's got a crazy backstory and just knows his stuff. You know, he's competed for, you know, more years than I've been alive. Yeah. So it's like...
And at the highest level. Right, you know? Right. I mean, that's... And the other thing, too, is... And I've... told this to the Greta folks and some of the people in the economic development space, like, we don't understand how lucky we are to have him and Quincy, because you would think for his level of experience and you know, instruction, you'd be in New York City, right? Or Austin, right? To have that kind of level of jiu-jitsu, to have a little old Quincy, Illinois, you know, be able to go and say, hey, I've got an instructor that has a lineage that's very direct to the top and is from Brazil and has been doing this his entire life. You know, it's no knock to some of the other schools, but the other schools have guys that learned it like us, right? They learned it third party. And even 10 years ago, they learned it on YouTube, and there was a lot of other things filling those voids that Professor Vitor has come and been able to do that, you know, all in one spot, one-stop shop. Here's what you got, and here's where you go. So I think the community is very lucky to have, you know, have him in the area, and I'm not sure that they really know that, you know.
Yeah. It's also just something that's emerging, you know. Yeah. Like, it's just kind of starting, and it's working its way through the community, and just like representing the school in a good way is all you can really do until you get more folks in. And like the Salvation Army tournament, that was a huge step in the right direction for that. I know you had a hand in setting that up. So yeah, I mean, I want to respect your time here. What
time is it?
4:55.
Okay. We can go like, you know, 5 more minutes, and if you don't have any other questions,
no, yeah,
we're good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just going to chat a little bit more about your marathon experience. Have you heard about the term, and it's kind of been more popular on social media, is like the hairless monkeys that don't get tired. Have you ever heard of that? So it's kind of like a theme where it'll go back to like caveman times, and it'll have like a woolly mammoth or something running, and it's like, oh, I've been running for 2 days, there's no way they're still chasing me.
Sure.
And you turn around and it's like the cavemen that just keep going. Yeah, keep going.
Sure.
And I think it's something about like the anatomy of just how we're built to kind of not like quick like cheetah, tiger, not sure. fast, but we can just endurance. How do you notice your body kind of changing when you were going through and you're really in the training mode for those Ironmans, ultra marathons, like ligaments and stuff like that? Is that something that kind of grows with you as you train?
I think so. It definitely does. I think initially, if you go too much too fast, you run into a lot of issues with ligaments and knees, right? Where you're having pains and aches and things that, but I think if you ramp up correctly, and there's a ton of good, you know, scientific data on how you do that. And you start with kind of the lower intensity side. I think that's one thing of the running that I learned is that the people that have had a lot of success at running low marathon times, they actually run a lot more miles at a lot lower heart rates than the average person. So you have somebody training for their first marathon and they're out doing like their long run on a Saturday or Sunday, and they're running like 12 or 14 miles, and they're running it like at 150, 160 heart rate the whole time. And they're just gassed, right? They're pushing and pushing and pushing. And what the ultra guys are doing is they're out running like at 120 heart rate at a much slower than race pace, but they're doing, instead of them doing, you know, for a week, you know, an average marathon week, when you're getting close to the end, you're probably running like 40 miles a week when you're kind of getting to that peak build. A lot of these guys in the ultra, they're running like 150, 200 mile weeks, right? So they're running like 25 and 30 mile days, but they're doing it at a very, very low, you know, heart rate. And that approach to it, I think is something that was very novel to me. But I did find, as I started doing that, my time started going down. It was like, it was the ironic, or the kind of I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, but it's the opposite of what I thought, right? It's like counterintuitive. I thought that if I ran harder, I'd get better, and I wasn't getting any better. I was just tiring myself out, and I was not recovering right. When I started going slower, I actually started going faster during the races. So
yeah, wow, yeah. Some of those like training things is just like a you live and you learn kind of thing. Sure. I think when you can rely on like coaches and training and that sort of thing, that speeds up your process. So I guess to kind of close, where do you see yourself in the next, I don't know, 20 years towards retirement? Like where's the end goal for your career?
I think the end goal for my career is to have full autonomy in my time. So, and that probably means you had to have, you know, some financial backing to be able to do that, right? So you would have had to save some money. But I would never retire. I'll always be doing something. So it's really like, can I get to a point where I can do the thing that I want to do, right? If I want to go, you know, invest in my own jiu-jitsu school, can I go do that, right? I don't know what it actually is right now, but it's being able to have that freedom, that flexibility, you know, to get up in the morning, have a slow morning, have coffee and journal and, you know, spend an hour just kind of being, you know, present without having to get up at 5 a.m., get a workout in, get the kids ready, you know, and it's just kind of a constant, you know, go, 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 go. That could be a way to win, you know. I think for me, at the end of the day, if you ask, like, did you win, it kind of goes back to this quote, I don't know who to attribute it to, but it's ultimately winning is sleeping better. And I think that is the in sleeping being in real life, sleeping is an important thing, but also just that you're doing the things that you love and you want to do. And so you just sleep better at night because that's the thing that you're doing.
Your day's filled up.
Yeah. Your day's filled up with the things that you're passionate about at the pace that you want. So that in 20 years, that's where I hope to see myself. You know, in the short term, short of that, you know, I'd like to beat you a few more times in jiu-jitsu and then, you know, continue to keep Gates Air solvent. But, you know, my plan is to stay in this type of role running this company for, you know, as long as they'll have me.
Thanks, man. That was great. That was good. Awesome, dude.
I think it'll be good.